Mini-episode 49 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
And welcome back to mini episode number 49 of the FDH Lounge. Rick Morris, FDH managing partner, sitting here today with a good friend of mine, a longtime broadcast colleague. I have to say, we've had come through the virtual doors of the FDH Lounge such luminaries as Bob Barker, Steve Perry. But if I'm to say dignitary, to me, the man who defines dignitary, my good friend, Bob Glassman. Good to be back broadcasting with you again, my friend.
Thank you, Rick. Dignitary is fine. Dignified would be another story.
Well, that's a little too much for any of us, so we're not even going to shoot for that. I know what my limitations are. We're here today talking about this. You and I had meant to get together and sit down and do one of these things here, and lo and behold, something pretty timely ended up happening because you're a guy that's got a lot of background up close observing Dan Gilbert, the Cleveland Cavs owner, and he was much in the national news at the end of last week, and it continues to kind of linger around some of the controversy. The letter that he sent to Dan Gilbert in the aftermath of the three-team Chris Paul trade that ended up leading to David Stern vetoing it. He says that it was unconnected to that letter, but I think we all know otherwise. So there's been the usual suspects nationally who've had it in for Dan Gilbert ever since LeBron left and ever since he had the reaction to it. So there's been a lot of that, and again, he's just such a figure of national controversy, and I thought it might help illuminate a few things to our audience here to be able to pick your brain on the subject here and use that as kind of a jumping-off point to look at the NBA. So your thoughts on Dan Gilbert and what's going on in this situation?
Well, Rick, I guess it's best to start at the beginning and quickly move away front-forward, which gives you a good example of what he is doing and why he is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe when Dan Gilbert took over the Cavaliers, he was out of Michigan State, known as being aggressive, making some money, doing a little bit of college analytical abilities.
That's a wonderful euphemism.
Probability tables and finance at the same time. But anyways, in growing his company, very much always on the front end, and if you remember when he bought the Cavs, very, very quickly, he got rid of Mr. Silas and made his footprint, then LeBron, and then the rest is history with that. You're right, in getting a chance to know him, you were part of it initially, something that lasted for 6 years, a website that I created called the LeBrometer, which was meant before the end of his first, at the end of his first rookie contract, in order to gauge whether he's going to stay in Cleveland or leave. And that made a lot of news, and it made much greater news this past time around, and we all know how it ended. From that, I got to know Dan Gilbert and was told by somebody who knows him pretty well that Dan's somebody who likes to keep, like a lot of people, it's very trite to say, his friends close, but his enemies closer. And not that I at all was of any great threat to Dan Gilbert and swing LeBron away. And my feelings about Dan Gilbert as a person and as an owner remain very good. I was privy to a Quicken Loans only seminar for his top people, a motivation seminar where he went over his principles. Seems like a very good person. So that's where we'll take it at in terms of background knowledge of him and knowing that he likes to be a leader. And I think if we go to the night of the speech, that when you look at what Dan Gilbert said then, that was the beginning of maybe it was certainly the beginning of the post LeBron era.
Yeah.
But also the beginning of Dan Gilbert re-emerging as a personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'll throw it back to you and say, the night of the letter to the fans, what was the benefit of that letter to the Cavaliers as a basketball organization?
It rallied the fans around Dan Gilbert and the Cavs. It made him an object of, and I don't mean this in a pathetic way, an object of sympathy, but an object of sympathy in the sense that, gee, what more could this guy have done for LeBron? And he finds out about it this way, the way the decision went down, to not even get a phone call. One of the flunkies ended up calling him, I guess, right as the thing went on the air. Just the way that it all went down. The fact that he left citing a better chance to win elsewhere while being the de facto co-general manager for 6 years, basically bullying them into some of their more ill-fated decisions that they made. They thought short-term because he had a short-term gun to their head. So I think he would have had that sympathy anyways, but I think it really generated it from the fans and said, hey, look, this guy might have come from Detroit originally, but he's one of us now. He gets it. He understands. Nationally, just the opposite. And I find it to be very unfortunate and very unfair, but nationally the response was very vitriolic, even down to the whole thing of, and this is something I find kind of funny as a guy who's done a little bit of graphic arts from time to time, people even picking on him for using Comic Sans, which what kind of a stupid talking point is that? Oh, Dan Gilbert uses Comic Sans in his screed to the fans there. But it all just became one of these things where Dan Gilbert, he's a bitter, angry guy. He got kicked in the teeth. LeBron left fair and square, and he just can't handle it. That's the national talking points as far as Dan Gilbert is concerned. And, again, you and I find it very unfortunate, I guess, but that's the way that it is. And what happened last week, unfortunately, just reinforced that from all the usual characters. The Michael Wilbons on down saying, there goes Dan Gilbert again. And it's unfortunate in that way. I don't think it's going to hamper the team in free agency ultimately, because money talks. And if you have the money, you can lure away guys. Maybe if you're not in a prime locale, you might have to pay a little bit more, but there's not going to be an additional Dan Gilbert tax beyond that, I don't think. But not for lack of effort from ESPN and everybody else to really demonize this guy, which I find unfortunate.
Well, when you start with Michael Wilbon, that's where you should end with, because I try to make the conscious effort never to listen to him ever again. He took participation, well knowing and well paid, in that LeBron debacle.
Yep.
With going to South Beach. Mm-hmm. And for that, forevermore, he's a paid shill, also one who just screams with the other fella, Kornheiser.
Right.
And makes it somewhat of a regrettable show.
It is.
Kornheiser does have a little bit of knowledge, but it gets the ESPN shtick. And I agree about ESPN, but I had heard early on, now I'll say it's a secondhand comment, but one that's been pretty consistent in what I think of my of views and what's said publicly, is that Dan Gilbert was not a well-liked owner, is not well-liked by David Stern. And I'll bring that to this week's controversy, in that Mark Cuban was known to not be in favor of the Chris Paul trade. Mm. Gilbert and supposedly another owner. The only one that we really ever, we heard about Cuban, but we were listened to verbatim the letter that that Dan Gilbert wrote. Mm-hmm. And was he the only one to write a letter? The other two just say it verbally? What's that whole dynamic?
That might very well have been the case. Nobody else might have put it on paper. We saw with, as we mentioned, the Comic Sans letter to the fans, that Dan Gilbert's not afraid to put his thoughts down on paper or email or whatever the case may be for the format of it. I think you hit upon something very interesting. I don't think he is well liked by David Stern, because I don't know if it's mere guilt by association or if it goes beyond that. Who's Dan Gilbert's best friend in the NBA? You just mentioned it, Mark Cuban. And David Stern hates Mark Cuban. So there's a little bit of that there. And hey, if David Stern resents him for his part in this, it could be maybe he saw him as acting as a stalking horse for Mark Cuban, and indeed that may have been the case a little bit here. But Gilbert makes an interesting point, I think, because in a pure basketball sense, I do have to agree, New Orleans got as much as they could have gotten for this. You never trade a megastar for equal value. You're never going to make that up in the parts, what you're trading away in the whole. But with a gun to their head, he's going to leave in a year. They did about as good as they could do. Dan Gilbert's talking about a bigger point here, I think, which is, what did we just go through this lockout for? What was all this pain endured for if the status quo ante has returned, if we have the same system? And as he said in the letter, 25 teams that might as well be named the Washington Generals. That's what he's looking at here. People are saying, well, you liked it fine when you were one of the five teams named the Harlem Globetrotters. Okay, I'll grant you that. And to a certain extent, basically, it's whose ox is being gored, as they say. But I think, to be intellectually honest, we would have to acknowledge that if he were arguing for the status quo as one of the privileged five, he would be wrong. And if he's advocating against the status quo as one of the 25 that are aggrieved, I think he's right.
Well, I agree, but I think he's right in a way where, take somebody we hope that Byron Scott also coached early on, who is in that position, by the name of Chris Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Take it forward 4 years, and it's Kyrie Irving, and the same thing is going on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the negotiations were about. The few people that are in place, the Dwight Howards and Chris Pauls, they will benefit just from the residue of the last agreement, and I agree with you totally. You are getting maybe not Denver Nugget Carmelo Anthony in return in terms of value, but you are getting valuable assets. And as you said, in a year, he can still walk to a high-level team. So I think I don't think there's any logic or there's not a lot of logic behind going against the trade for those two reasons. One, you do get pieces and parts, never the equal of the whole you trade in return. But number two, these two particular players, it's going to happen to no matter what you try to do, because people will leave room in their salary cap, and they're getting good trades. So why do it with these two? You're doing it for the next generation of players.
What's interesting is, and I think this is what Gilbert is looking at in terms of leverage, that players are using the threat of leaving in a year to try to cherry pick a year early while they're still under contract. This is where I want to go now. In other words, you can trade me to this other team, but good luck getting anything in return for me, because I am not signing an extension with that team. I want to go to this other team. Now, essentially, that the rules of tampering don't seem to apply to players. And I think we saw that, and I think that happened in the whole LeBron situation, too. There was pretty overt tampering by Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James, even ahead of July 1st. So I think it's the same thing here. Gilbert is objecting to it in that way, and in that sense of what I would call the inmates running the asylum.
And to your first degree, I wasn't there, but I'm pretty certain that Mickey Arison, the owner of the Heat, his son was working in concessions at the Beijing,
yes,
Olympics, and that's where he met with the Gang of Three to,
yes,
get that thing rolling. So that was the beginning of that.
Mm-hmm.
I just put myself, ironically, in a position of a team that Dan Gilbert partly owns in the New Orleans Hornets. But to that extent, it's still a good trade talent-wise for them, and it's easy for him to say, let the person walk away next year for nothing.
Right.
But he's still getting paid this year.
Right.
He just won't be available in a year's time, and that team will have as much to hold with it as the Cavaliers did with LeBron James.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, New Orleans could trade Chris Paul anywhere right now, but they're not going to get much in return for 1 year of Chris Paul. And I think that's what's being looked at here, the ability of players to leverage this in this kind of a way. I mean, and again, I think that goes to Gilbert's original point. I mean, the more things change, the more they stay the same. We're gearing up for another truncated NBA season here, and we're looking at the same set of issues that transpired previously. And for those who celebrate complete freedom by players and blah, 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 they love it, the Michael Wilbons of the world. To those of us with any kind of common sense who realize that you have to have stability and order in a league and something where the tampering rules really mean something, whether by ownership or by players, I think that's something we would find a little more troubling.
I think, Rick, it's tough when you don't have the hard salary cap that I know people like Dan Gilbert wanted in place. And although you can say it does promote a little bit of objectivity and gamesmanship in the NFL, unfortunately that goes for everything but the AFC North, where you have a few great general managers that help to dissuades that fact of a hard salary cap promotes any team being able to win any given year.
That's the equalizer. Yeah. No question about that. You know, and in the NBA, it's a more difficult system because players disproportionately have more impact. There's only five guys on the court, but beyond that, there's only a limited number of megastars in the league. And you look back at the last three decades plus in the league, and what, the 2004 Pistons, they won without a megastar. I always said it was kind of a collection of 8.5s. They didn't have a 10 or a 9.5 on that team, but they had about three or four 8.5s at that time. Beyond that, we could quibble about whether Isaiah Thomas was top 10 in the league in 89 and 90. I think he probably was. Beyond that, you go back to the 79 Seattle Supersonics where Jack Sikma was the best player. So these players disproportionately carry that kind of weight. And if anybody wants to know why Cleveland was so aggrieved when LeBron left, well, there are those who took it emotionally and personally. I didn't, but I'm sitting there going, my team is screwed. My team was this close to a championship, and they're starting all over again. That's just the way the NBA works.
Boy, Rick, you hit it right on the head. I couldn't think of the two teams, the Pistons you spoke of and the Supersonics years earlier, that lived with 8.5s. Interesting that you say that, as I see a team like the Nuggets, who partially through the Anthony trade, was developing a little stable of 8.5s. 8.5s, but pretty good players, and they decided to blow that all up, not wanting to go that route of settling for an eight-person deep team, including Nene, if you signed him. But interesting, the thought that you do need a superstar, maybe as much for marketing purposes now as any. You see most NBA games being introduced as by the network, the star and the team.
Yeah.
Not just the one team versus another.
Yeah, David Stern started that back in the day with NBC, with Magic, Jordan, Barkley, Hakeem. Yeah, that's when that whole rap started. I think with Denver, and that's an interesting thing about the NBA, you look at that there, and I think they'll tell you privately, probably, because they don't want to heap any extra pressure, they're hoping Danilo Gallinari moves up to that level. They're hoping, and this is the whole hypnotic kind of appeal here, the next Dirk. Which Euro is the next Dirk? They're hoping Gallinari grows into being the next Dirk. They were insistent on him being in that type of deal. And frankly, if you have to move a guy like Carmelo Anthony, that's what you want to do. You want to get a guy who has that kind of ceiling to come in and be that kind of a guy. In the NBA, it's all about ceiling, which is what's so seductive here, and that's why to a team like the Cavs, high draft picks like the one that they got, unfortunately they had the fourth draft pick in a draft that was too deep last spring here, but they still got Kyrie Irving with the first pick overall. Denver's looking at the same thing with Gallinari. They're looking at him hopefully as the centerpiece they can build around with the other guys there. The thing is, if Denver's wrong about that, they're not going to make it anywhere anyways. I think that's how it's going to end up going.
Well, in going back to the Cavaliers for a little bit, in looking at where Dan Gilbert is now, and no matter what he said, he has a team, and I thought you hit it right earlier. In my mind, yes, when it comes to like a mid-level or whatever the current vernacular will be about a mid-level exemption player, that type of person, if given the same scenario in Cleveland and another city, everything else being given equal, might go elsewhere just because I don't think Dan Gilbert is real high on a certain group of players list. But again, it'll come down more than that. And the first thought I have is Dan Gilbert as the head executive of the Cavaliers is, and we needn't look any further than the Browns and in my mind the Indians as well, but we'll see how Chris Grant is because he will write the legacy of Dan Gilbert going forward with LeBron James. I argue either of us could have made the moves we did, albeit LeBron made them hamstrung by getting older veterans with a few years left on their contract because he did not commit like Kevin Durant did here. And I think that first acid test for Chris Grant, who in the last year did enough good things. They were a little bit under the table. I mean, a little bit, they were lower end items, but the trade with Hickson, we'll see how that goes. Obviously, We got great luck, but luck was the residue of good work in getting the Clippers pick, which turned out to be Irving.
Yeah.
But Tristan Thompson will be that first player because it was a weird, just almost like the Browns this past year, the first four players, the A.J. Greens and Von Millers and Cam Newtons, they got eaten up, and we got left with maybe a Julio Jones, a person who could have been yesterday proved at the end to be a good pick. But Tristan Thompson is in that position of, do you draft him? Do you go for the top European, the Lithuanian? He'll be able to really make a mark for himself by Tristan Thompson proving out to be a valuable NBA player.
He has a lot. Oh yeah, he has a lot of work to do on his offensive game. Got to work on that jump shot. That's what makes me a little bit leery. But I'm not sure anybody in that position really would have been a great pick. I was not thrilled about the selection of him. As a lifelong Cavs fan, I hope he proves me wrong. But this is what's interesting: the cyclical nature of these things. Horrible draft last year versus in 2012. Now, part of it is the Harrison Barneses of the world, Terrence Jones. Those who were leery of a lockout stayed in school. You had some guys who wouldn't otherwise, Jared Sollinger as well, although I question whether he's at the tippy-top level of these other guys perhaps here. But you're looking at a situation where the Cavs could be picking with the fifth pick, the sixth pick this year. I think it'll be higher than that, frankly, and still do quite well versus last year with the fourth pick. It was already scraps. Selfishly, as a Cavs fan, I wanted no season because I had thought that there would be some kind of a working, not exactly a replicate of last year, but essentially you could get another high pick without the pain. Now there will be another season of blood, sweat, and tears to quote-unquote earn that high pick. Although, had you heard about this, had you heard about that they might use a formula based on the last three seasons, and maybe this goes back to David Stern having it in for Dan Gilbert, that they were talking about if there was no season, draft order to be determined on an average of the last three seasons. Well, let's see. Which team in the league had the best record for two seasons and went in the crapper for the third? Dan Gilbert's team. So that would and that would have had the Cavs drafting like 20th, basically, on some kind of insane thing. But then again, doesn't echo back to our point about the disproportionate impact of franchise players. With LeBron, they were at that level. Without LeBron, they were where they were last year. Although, having said that, for as much as LeBron put a gun to their head over the period of time and made them make these short-term moves just to appease him, and for all this talk when he left, you never put anybody around LeBron. Again, ignoring LeBron's culpability in that. Isn't it interesting LeBron had about the same record with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh as he did with these quote-unquote bums in Cleveland? He didn't. Matter of fact, I think it was a shade below. So that's just very interesting. Now, part of it is they thinned out their entire team to get those three guys, and that goes to the question of depth that I talked about going into last year. But perhaps a little bit of revisionism is due for the cast of characters that were around LeBron when he was in Cleveland if he couldn't exceed that, at least in the regular season in Miami.
Well, I think the one thing we saw in Miami last year that, unfortunately for people like me who don't, like you said earlier, LeBron's gone. Mm-hmm. I learned that probably too late of an age, at least on the last thing I'm going to say, you can't control three things.
Mm-hmm.
The weather, the traffic, or how your pro sports teams do.
Okay.
And to worry about how LeBron does and people just waking up every day, and I hear calling it a national shows when I listen to them that, oh, Miami lost again. And I think the commonality between Cleveland and LeBron and Miami, LeBron last year was, again, no point guard, no true point guard. And I really think that Norris Coles eventually, maybe by the end of this year, certainly by next year, could be that person developing point guard skills a little bit. He has great energy, great defensive skills, is coachable. And I also think, and not that we're going to make this ESPN, who covers Miami and the other teams, Miami and the NFC East,
right?
But as when in their sports coverage, but I think that they'll be able to take advantage of a Chauncey Billups or somebody, unlike a Mike Bibby, who isn't totally over the hill yet and can give you some time. Which, Rick, is my segue into the whole season itself.
Mm-hmm.
The game, you know, five games in 6 days, every other day a game. I think in last year, near the end of the year, that Green Bay purposely stashed the running back from Ball State, Starks,
yeah.
in order to have him have fresh legs near the end of the year, sort of similar to how not it was done the same manner, mm-hmm. but how Dan Heron looked after three or four games,
yeah,
or when I saw another running back recently in the NFL come back from an un-leg-related injury, that he looked very fresh. And so I wonder, in the NBA, are they really going to watch minutes? I mean, how badly are you going to win games at the expense of using certain players back-to-back 40-minute nights? The Celtics, one team I'm thinking, really can't afford to do it. Not that I give a gosh darn about the Celtics, mm-hmm. but at this point, it's all against Miami in my book. Not that I fester about it or mm-hmm. sit on it or dream or watch for it, but if given my druthers, I'll root against Miami.
Sure. No, I understand that. I think all right-thinking Americans would agree with that last sentiment. I think that it's going to be very interesting because you won't be able to see the nucleus that each of the top teams has on the floor as much. They're going to have to spread out the minutes a little bit, and that's what makes it interesting in Miami. I mean, I kind of joked about that in the past, that you put all three guys on the court against your average team, they go up by 20. You sit them on the bench for 5 minutes, and you throw the second team in, and they're down by 20, and you got to put them back in there. So for teams like Miami, they're going to have to regulate that in a kind of way. Like Boston, the veteran guys, you got to wonder about that also. L.A., people are starting to catch up a little bit to my questions about Kobe in terms of, he's 31, but 31 out of high school, that's an older 31 on the knees. And, you know, we're all these guys eventually, I mean, KG came right out of high school. We're going to see it in LeBron in 3-4 years, especially with his style of play. It ages you when you go right to 82 games out of high school. So teams are going to have to contend with that this year, and it's going to be very interesting. And maybe it'll give some of the lesser lights on some occasions a chance to steal a game or two, maybe more so than usual, because there's not as much of a drop-off between the top teams, second tier and third tier, and the first, second, and third tier of the bad teams. I don't know. That's just one possibility.
And I don't know why I'm obsessing on the Nuggets, because – being a graduate of University of Denver,
yeah.
loving their college hockey team, but learning to have a great disdain for Red Miller and the Orange Crush back in those days, let alone what happened in the mid-'80s with Denver. I really don't care for the current goings-on or any goings-on, even with basketball. But it goes to my point of, my goodness, I would have signed a nay. I would have kept Raymond Felton. I would have had nine guys, including your Gallinari, as one of the people that I could play 25 minutes a game and keep people rested. And it might be a year where going deep would be a good thing. And I remember the Cavs unfortunately had the really bad experience of having an extraordinarily deep team during the expansion draft in the late 80s, I believe it was.
Yeah, so they lost Del Curry.
Where they lost Machine Gun Del Curry, maybe their spermatic rights to his offspring, as well as we lost somebody else. You remember who else we lost? I'll tell you this. He was a big guy.
You remember he's... Hot Rod, and then they got him back.
You have to explain that story some.
I thought that was what happened. I don't know.
We lost a guy from the Ivy League.
Ivy League?
Yes.
Who? Boy, I'm really drawing a blank on this.
Chris Dudley.
Okay. Yeah. Not any good from the free throw line, but pretty good.
Very
otherwise.
Serviceable defensively.
Yeah.
Blocked shots and.
Yeah.
Played smart.
And you know that was when the Cavs had the kind of depth. But you saw that in the pre-expansion era. You start to get into the 90s, and now I don't think there's anything, because that debate was there a couple of years ago about the Lakers. How would the Lakers of the last couple of years, or even the Spurs that were winning titles in the last decades, have fared? And even the Bulls of the 90s, we started to see it then. The Bulls of the 90s started to be a little bit thinner than, say, the Showtime Lakers, the Celtics of back in the day, et cetera. So it's kind of a different game now. And maybe to an extent, that's how disproportionate the star power really is. I think when we're looking at the league and when we're looking at situations with a LeBron, a Chris Paul, etc., you're looking at a league where it's a little bit thinner beyond the top levels here. So whether it's the fact that today's best athletes, bigger, stronger, faster, you can look at a guy like LeBron and make a heck of a case for that. Maybe the greatest athletics and basketball IQ combined in the history of the NBA, just hasn't had the winning gene yet at this point, but everything else in the mix. Maybe it's that the players of today, the top players, are a little bit better, but yeah, they do seem to stand out a little bit more than in the past, even a Magic Johnson in the 80s when there were so many other great players.
Well, Rick, one thing we always like to do together, and one thing that I always rail on you for sportscasters or sports writers in particular not doing, is predicting a little bit in the future.
Okay.
So first one comment, and then we'll go to a question two I have for you.
Okay.
One is that Dan Gilbert must really be principled, because if I'm Dan Gilbert and I really have a hard-on for LeBron as much as it seems it, wouldn't you want Chris Paul going to the Lakers? I mean, the point guard that they're missing to join that team and possibly be one of the few teams that can possibly beat Miami. Now, injuries notwithstanding, but unfortunately, if it were the Cavs with LeBron, I mean, the good teams are going by the wayside. San Antonio is no longer San Antonio. Mm-hmm. The Celtics way in the downside. Chicago may have crested, and that Boozer put another albatross around another team.
Yeah.
Seemingly. And it just seems like the year is set for Miami, and you really want to create at least one or two, especially out west, a team that is good. It's surprising that just for the sakes of, hey, let's get some competition for Miami, that Gilbert wouldn't rail on Howard going somewhere or something.
I've heard that theory, and if true, it is a testament to Dan Gilbert's intellectual honesty. The more cynical way that you could look at that is to look at it and say, boy, L.A.'s really hollowing out their team to get Chris Paul, and can Chris Paul, Kobe, and 10 guys from the YMCA take out the Heat? Maybe he was looking out for them more than they were, or thinking that he was. I don't know. I love conspiracy theories. I mean, he could have been looking at it that way.
It'll be interesting to see what teams do you think will do good this year based on, again, everything but injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you see your final four possibly being?
Well, it's good timing on this. I was just working this morning on our FDH predictions for the year. I'm going to say a rematch in the East. I think Miami and Chicago. I wish from my perspective, I could say Chicago could take them out. I thought they would last year. They dominated them in the regular season, and then for whatever reason, couldn't get it done in the playoffs.
Carlos Boozer, yeah. Carlos Loser.
That's true.
Does he have anything left? You talk about somebody getting old. He looks like Travis Hafner's on steroids.
Yeah, he does. In the West, I've got it very close between, first of all, the West semifinals. I think we're going to see two seven-game series. I'm going to say the Lakers over Memphis by just a hair. I think Memphis is almost ready to take down a team like that. And the other one might be even closer, although also seven games. I'm going to say Dallas over OKC. I think we get a rematch of the semifinals in the West last year and the West finals. We don't know the composition of the Lakers right now. I give it to the Lakers over Dallas. And in the finals, perhaps it's a triumph of hope over reality, but I would still pick the Lakers over Miami, because I don't think Miami's in a catch-22. They can't prove anything now till they win it. So then they might say that's kind of unfair, but the way that they larded the expectations on them, they get to the finals again, and it's like, okay, prove that you can do what you couldn't do previously. And I think that's where they are. And I strongly suspect that this might be the year for them. I would still give it to the Lakers narrowly, but that might be hope over reality.
Rick, that's why I either hate or love working with you and talking with you, because I like talking with smart people, but not people that have at least the same teams in the Eastern and Western Finals that I do. And again, choosing winners and losers are so much predicated on injury that to do it at the beginning of the year is a little crazy, but at least in this case, it gives you perspective. Those are the only teams that can really seemingly do it as healthy teams. The NFL was as easy to predict this year because of the strike.
Yeah.
You knew who was going to do it, although the NBA does present that challenge of bringing along younger talent. And the two things about the NBA, the one I predicted for months, they'd begin on Christmas Day because that's the day that is really the unofficial, official beginning of basketball. Mm-hmm. And frankly, except for those money-grubbing players and owners, I wish to. I don't have season tickets to that sport, but any game before Christmas, really, you're not thinking too much about NBA basketball. Well, except maybe in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. But, you know, otherwise, agreed in terms of the finals. My feeling is that Miami will, that Norris Cole will prove to be a big part, and also they'll get a possibly another point guard similar to Chauncey Billups. But I think other than Joel, is it okay to call every Joel? There was one, like, it was a horse jockey, you know, the Spanish Joel.
Pinheiro,
yes, yeah,
yeah,
Joel Pinheiro was one. Every Joel to me, no matter whether it's Joel Smith, is
right.
Joel Smith. So in this case, Joel Anthony, I don't think is the epitome of a defensive center, but
no.
I think the Heat, and again, I'm not concerned with the Heat, but just in the thoughts of overall looking at the NBA, I think that they'll be able to get their mitts on some minimum level player. I saw somebody just recently sign minimum level contract who's not a bad NBA player.
I don't know if it was minimum level, but they signed Shane Battier, who would be an interesting part.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, yeah.
That's another good
maybe
part.
Maybe that was minimum. Okay.
Yes, that
yeah.
was, and if they could fit one more. But again, this isn't about the Miami Heat. It's about the NBA, and hopefully we'll be able to grow our stars. We'll be able to get a few more, and we will not see what we see in baseball, which I love the way the MLB network works, but you sit and you just wait for people to trade players. I thought it was very interesting, and it does change subjects to baseball, but I thought Hoynes had an interesting column on Sunday about what players have had 3 and 4 years of experience are arbitration eligible, and the fact that if you don't sign somebody before their fifth season, this was Bob Melvin saying this,
right,
that they're as good as gone.
Right.
And in the Indians' case, Cabrera is one of those, and Chu is the other.
Right, right. Yeah, that was in the Cleveland Plain Dealer and on Cleveland.com. Yeah, that was an interesting article. And you see, again, in baseball, the potential downside to even to locking up guys long term. You do what's the right thing on paper. Minnesota did it with Joe Mauer, who doesn't look like he's going to hold up behind the plate the remainder of that contract. Milwaukee does it with Ryan Braun, who is he going to be the same guy when he comes back? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So, you know, there's all kinds of different things that come into play here. These are the things you run into in different sports. It's one of the reasons I think the NBA introduced the amnesty clause in there, and teams are now looking at how to use that. The Knicks, of course, shooting themselves in the foot, amnestying Chauncey Billups after just extending him in April and losing the chance to protect themselves on the Amari Stoudemire contract. In our time remaining, you got any other NBA thoughts for us, Bob?
Well, that'll be it. It'll be again, it's a league of, like they all the sports are, general managers.
Mm-hmm.
And who is drafting right? Who's picking up these extra pieces, especially for this year? Who's locking up the right people? And, Rick, as you mentioned, that amnesty clause. Amari Stoudemire is a perfect example. Now, the Knicks may be forced a little bit, they think, to clear the books to sign somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But teams certainly, like the Cavs, should be in no hurry unless Baron Davis decides not to get out of the jacuzzi until March or April. But I think it's a very interesting time and, as always, an interesting time for the league coming out of a strike, shortened season, and a new CBA agreement.
It is, and it's always a good time to sit down with you, my friend. It's been too long since we've been able to do this. I look forward to doing this again here at some point soon with the Mobile FDH Lounge. Good to have you in, my friend.
Rick, it's always a pleasure. Remember, in Cleveland especially, the truth hurts.
The truth hurts, indeed.